listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Daily Gold Podcast. Thank you for tuning in today. And I'm really pleased today to interview Larry McDonald. It's the first time we've had him on the program. And Larry was, years ago, was a highly successful trader for Lehman Brothers. Then he moved on and he wrote a book about what happened there called The Colossal Failure of Common Sense, the inside story of the collapse at Lehman Brothers. And based on his work in that book, he's given over 100 presentations around the world. And currently, he is the editor of a report he created called the Bear Traps Report, of which I'm a subscriber. And Larry has done an excellent job trading the gold miners the last couple of years, especially buying low and selling high, essentially. Larry, I know your time is tight, but as we get started, let's focus on the short term with respect to precious metals and what you see happening right now as far as the macro factors that are driving gold and what might drive gold for the rest of the year.
Well, you know, gold is still being driven by the credit markets and in what we call rates markets. So that's the government bond markets. And it's been a great couple of years to trade gold because we've had incredible swings. I mean, a year ago today, we had the Brexit, and there was about $15 trillion in negative-yielding bonds on Earth, government bonds mainly, some corporates. And today, because central banks are reversing their policy, they're pulling back accommodation, we're down to about $6 trillion of negative-yielding bonds on the planet Earth. And that is a big factor for the gold price because if you think about it, if you have to put $1 billion somewhere that's very liquid, gold's going to be one of your first choices after government bonds. And when government bonds have a negative yield, gold's your first choice. So today, near term, there's some headwinds for gold because at least through the summer, the central bankers are going to try to pretend that they are turning more hawkish. But as we've seen in recent years, the ability of central bankers to maintain a less accommodative position has been very limited. So the question is, how long can the central bankers get away with this in terms of pulling back accommodation? Our guess is just a few months.
Really? So you, just to follow up on that, you think that gold could remain under pressure for a couple months, but after that, if central banks do have to at least pause what they're doing, then gold could see a pretty nice rally.
Exactly. When you're trading gold, you're really trading what we call financial conditions and rates. So financial conditions are, if you think back the last 5 years, and every time, so go back to 2013, when the Fed announced the taper program of their asset purchases in May of 2013, financial conditions viciously tightened, and you've got a situation where a tightening of those financial conditions brought forth a rally in the gold price because the financial conditions are tied to the gold price because they're tied to the rates market. So as financial conditions tighten, you've got a situation where that's really, really good for gold because that's a sign when as conditions tighten, the central bankers have to pull back and then become more accommodative. So it's really a swing between, you know, are they accommodative or are they pulling back accommodation? And right now we're in a pulling back accommodation mode.
Right. Now let's talk about the bond market and the stock market, which can also impact gold. Of course, we see yields have been moving higher in recent weeks. You made a great call on that about a month or so ago, really nailed that. It's just over the months ahead and over the next year, what do you see? I mean, I know that's difficult to call, but what is your sense of what might happen in the bond market and the equity market, and could that have any positive or negative impact on precious metals?
Well, what we do is we measure the financial conditions and the tightness in stocks and bonds. And so what's going to happen is, as the Fed and as the central banks try to pull back accommodation, they, at some point, I think in the next month or very near term, will trigger a tightening in financial conditions. And that's because, you know, the Fed wants to, Yellen has her legacy here. You're really dealing with a Fed governor that's potentially on the way out. We think she's on the way out. And someone like a Gary Cohn is going to come in February. So Yellen has a vested interest in protecting her legacy. She's been there. Her term's up in February. And if she's out in February, she's going to use the next couple of months to protect her legacy. And what we mean by that is she's now much more concerned about asset bubbles than she... During the election year, she was, in our opinion, she was laying down quite a bit and trying to play ball and not upset the election. She's a labor market economist. Now she's become, you know, much more hawkish because if she is out in February, she wants to have that her legacy show that she tried to take down the balance sheet, pop some asset bubbles. And the point being is that as she does this, and as the other central, this is not just Yellen. I mean, you're talking about Draghi. The Central Bank of Canada hiked rates today for the first time in 7 years. So you've got a whole bunch of these banks that are tightening financial conditions in a world where it's been proven to us over and over again the ability of the global economy, especially the U.S., the G4 economies, the ability of the big, say, four or five economies to take a less accommodative central bank position is very, very, very much in question. So as they all try to tighten at the same time, they're probably going to trigger something in the equity or bond markets that will, in other words, credit risk will veto the Fed policy path, like the credit risk in the markets. Eventually, what they want to do with this hawkish path will be vetoed by the credit risk that they're going to create.
And as far as the problems that can come in, I know credit risk is obviously one. So is there anything we should watch for that aside from the credit markets? In other words, are there a couple of indicators or even economic statistics that you're looking for that I guess could kind of precede any reversal in Fed policy?
Well, one of the things we're watching is the high-yield bond market and the spread between, say, high-yield bonds and treasuries, high-yield bonds and corporate bonds. Another thing is on the consumer side, we saw a pickup in defaults in student loans, auto loans, commercial real estate. And so those markets are not very strong, and a pickup in interest rates can really knock those markets into a problem. So it's credit risk that would be created by rising interest rates. Another thing is in Canada, this is an amazing dynamic because you've got a pickup in inflation in Canada, but you've got a central bank that's hiking rates into a housing market that is deteriorating at its fastest pace in a decade in Canada. So up to our north in the United States, you've got a situation where they could quite easily trigger a credit event there with a hawkish position. So we're watching, and the other thing is just the financial conditions. We have an index of our 21 Lehman systemic risk indicators. central bank in Chicago Fed, the Chicago Federal Reserve, has a financial conditions index that measures the tightness in these conditions. And so you want to watch these indexes. If financial conditions tighten, that's a sign that the Fed's going to potentially get knocked off of their horse.
Okay, now let me follow up on the Fed, because it based on your reporting, it looks like, as you said, Yellen could be out and Gary Cohn could be the leading candidate to replace her. So what does that mean for Fed policy going forward? I mean, how would that change to have more of a markets practitioner relative to what we've had in the past?
Well, the key is that we believe Trump wants a dovish practitioner. So in a perfect world, Trump wants a Yellen-type dove but is also someone that has driven and flown the F-16. In other words, somebody that's actually been in a risk seat. Gary Cohn had a seat at the table in 2008 financial crisis. Yellen did not. And when I wrote my book, Colossal Failure of Common Sense, in talking to everybody that we talked to, it was pretty clear that Ben Bernanke, the Fed chair, was kind of in a backseat role, and Hank Paulson, the people that have actually been in risk seats, were driving the bus and making the big decisions on an hourly basis. So I think President Trump wants someone like that that's actually run $1 billion and someone that's been in a risk seat. And Chair Yellen's a brilliant, brilliant woman, but she admitted in her last speech, she's there, the Fed's trying to make more phone calls and they're talking more toward asset managers and risk takers and risk managers than they are listening to their models, because the mistake that they made in 2006 and 7 and 8, they became way too dependent and way too focused on their models, which deceived them. Bernanke stated in 2007 that subprime was mortgages were contained. You know, he was dead wrong. And Yellen is concerned about being too addicted to the model, so I commend her for that. But at the end of the day, Trump wants someone that's actually been in a risk seat at the table.
So then, do you see, looking at that in the years ahead, do you see the increase in inflation that many people have been looking for in recent years? I mean, is that likely, in your view, based on Fed policy or even more fiscal spending? I mean, what's your outlook for inflation over the next couple of years?
Well, on our blog, we've got a good blog at thebeartrapsreport.com, and we do these blogs like every quarter. There's a really good blog up there about the labor force, and you'd be shocked. 16% of young men, healthy young men between the ages of 21 and 30, are not in the labor force that were in the labor force 10 years ago. So what's happened is necessity is the mother of invention. As Barack Obama in the last administration was extremely, you know, huge heart, big, big social window, a lot of wonderful programs helping people. But at the end of the day, we have about 17 million people that are between the ages of 25 to 55 that have left the labor force. Out of that, there's like young people between the ages of 21 and 30. There's, you know, upwards of a million young people that are not in the labor force that have been in previous decades. So there's a bunch of reasons why we have this secular stagnation. You know, GDP in the United States is consistently growing at less than 2% after we've spent $10 trillion of deficit spending the last 8 years. It's disgusting. And so we've done a lot of wonderful government spending, but we have a lot of young people. And everybody, if you, one of the biggest lies in economics right now is the aging of America is the biggest cop out for this 2% GDP. Sure, absolutely, we have an aging population. Completely agree. There's 10,000 people every day that are turning 65, up from, say, 4,000 10 years ago. That's all true. All true. But guess what? There's 4 to 5, probably 5.5 million people that are between the ages of 21 and 45 that are not in the labor force that were 7 or 8 years ago. So until you get these young people in the labor force with full-time jobs, we're not going to get the inflation that we need. So it could be another year and a half, 2-3 years away before we eat through this 5 million. If you do the math, if you're doing 250,000 jobs a month, you know, then maybe in two and a half years you're going to eat through this 5 million. But you know, the question is, why are these young, healthy people on the sidelines?
So then, with respect to gold and gold stocks, what's your long-term outlook? Is this a sector that you see that can really enter a huge bull market, or I mean, is it going to take more time for it? You know, more time meaning more than a year for it to bottom and base here.
Well, remember, to me, the gold market has two engines. One is, in a deflationary environment that we've been in, the amount of money that's in negative-yielding bonds is extremely bullish for gold. So you can have deflation, but if there's $15 trillion bucks in negative-yielding bonds, gold prices are going to be $300 or $400 higher than they are now, right? And the other aspect is when we do finally chew through this 5 or 6 million, jobs of young people that are out of the labor force, eventually that's going to bring forth what's called the average hourly earnings and wage pressures inflation, and that's going to help gold. So there's two ways to win with gold. The problem with gold is when you're in the middle spot, and that's kind of where we are now, is where the negative yielding bonds have dissipated down to, say, 5 or 6 trillion. That's not so good for gold, and we don't have the inflation yet because we still have lots of young people that are watching video games and doing whatever they're doing. So we need to get that average hourly earnings, that inflation up, and that's going to come through getting people back in the labor force. So there's two ways to win. If the Fed backs away and the central banks around the world back away from this hawkish turn and they pull back and they start to bring back accommodation, right? In other words, they potentially move toward cutting rates or just the reference of cutting rates. They don't even have to cut rates, but if they change the language toward more accommodative policy, the amount of negative yielding bonds is going to surge and gold is going to rocket. So you want to watch out for kind of the gray zone where we are now. And it's not going to last forever. We just think it could last a couple of months.
I see. So do you think that gold, I mean, your big picture, just to press you a little bit, your big picture view on gold, I mean, the next rebound that gold could have, is this something that you see going to a new high, or do you see, like many people on Wall Street, do you see gold as kind of dead for, you know, a decade or two, basically, and any rebound would just kind of be small?
No, the next high will be kind of like the one we just had in the last 6 to 9 months. That's what we're heading back to, is when the Fed, if the Fed pulls back accommodation, and they create, that's what they're doing now. They're pulling back accommodation, the ECB, the Fed, Bank of England and the Bank of Canada. They're all pulling back accommodation. As that happens, they most likely bring forward some type of an event next, say, 4, 5, 6 months. Once they back away from this, gold's going to do really well. And then in say 2-3 years from now, when the labor force has grown to the point when we're probably a year away, when the labor force is finally getting, and so let's just say a year from now, you get a tax cut, and you have some infrastructure spending, and you're creating say 200,000 jobs a month, 150,000 to 250,000 jobs a month over the course of a year, then you're going to start to get some inflation a year from now. So that's where you're going to get the big moves are going to come, and this is the most important point of this conversation. The credit crisis of 2008 was a banking credit crisis. Credit contagion was in the banks. The next credit crisis is going to be a sovereign crisis, and the ability of these countries to sell bonds at horrible, disgusting terms. The credit risk on the sovereign side over the next like 18 months is going to become a much bigger issue, and that's going to create another type of demand for gold, the credit risk. So there's three ways to win with gold. You've got the credit risk of the sovereign countries, so countries like Italy with $2 trillion worth of debt, and they're selling bonds at below the U.S. 10-year. As investors lose faith in these sovereign countries, gold's going to be much more well sought, right? But right now you have the ECB buying bonds, and that's hurting the demand for gold in that respect. The other ways you win is just like we discussed, inflation or negative yielding bonds on Earth. So there's really three scenarios, but the big super spike in gold is going to come from the end result of years of moral hazard, where you've lent money to so many bad risks and so many bad countries that have taken on risks on their balance sheet, that eventually the credit risk starts to benefit gold, and that'll get you the super spike to 2000.
Okay, well, Larry, on that note, before I let you go, can you please tell our audience where they can go to follow you and your work?
Well, it's a couple of things. At Twitter, it's at ConvertBond, and the website is thebeartrapsupport.com. And they can follow us at those spots, and then we're on CNBC about once a week.
Okay, I'll pass along all that info to our listeners and followers. Larry, thanks so much for taking the time today, and I hope we can do this again in the months ahead.
Thanks, Jordan. All the best.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.